The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
An excerpt from Major a Friend's Guide to the Podcast Quadrant, unauthorized edition. Never turn your back on a co-host.
Welcome back to Between Pages and Friends, a book club podcast hosted by Con and Lauren, two book besties who read a lot of books. And John and Kyle are supportive gamer husbands who have agreed to read with us. I'm Lauren.
I'm John.
I'm Con.
And I'm Kyle. In today's episode, we're officially starting Onyx Storm from the Empyrean series. By Rebecca Yarros. We invited the Muppets to come along. Yay! This is a book club style podcast, meaning there will be no spoilers here for future chapters. So if you've only read the first 9 chapters of Onyx Storm, this is a safe place to read along with us. We'd love for you to share this podcast with your book besties and or significant other as well, so you can enjoy this epic series together too.
Additionally, this is your mild content warning. Onyx Storm is a new adult book, meaning it was written for audiences 18 and up. Therefore, our conversations about this book are also best suited to adults. We will be discussing themes and quotes from this section that include burnt headboards, high treason, and as always, daddy issues and zaddy issues.
Also, we just hit 1 year on Patreon. Because of that, we have decided to revamp our entire Patreon tiers. So our new $5 tier is now called Book Besties, where we invite you to become one of our book besties by being in our book club, joining us for live bookish events, and talking all things bookish in our exclusive Discord channel, plus a lot more. Our new $10 tier is now called Found Family, where you're not just one of the book besties, where you have all of those perks, but we also invite you to become become part of our Found family. You get early ad-free podcast episodes, merch discounts, voting privileges on upcoming books and events, plus so, so much more. So check out our Patreon and see which tier fits you best today.
Lastly, the best way to support any podcast is by writing a review on Audible or Apple Podcasts. It only takes a moment and it makes a lasting impact, helping our show reach more book besties. Here's a recent 5-star review on Audible from our new bestie, Ree Is Reading, titled Came for the Pages, Stayed for the Friends. And she writes,
"That's so cute.
I found this podcast when I was searching for anything that would cure my Throne of Glass hangover and binge-watched their episodes while I listened to the audiobooks for my immediate reread of the series. I quickly became hooked to the podcast and instantly loved the funny commentary and witty theories of the hosts and have listened to every episode they've released. Con and Lauren feel like my book besties, and Kyle and John always have great perspectives that make me rethink and reanalyze what's going on in the stories. If you're looking for a hilarious but still thought-provoking book club-style podcast, look no further, because BPNF has it all. Let's go. Ooh. Thank you, Ree.
You are my book bestie.
High praise.
Yeah, book bestie, Ree.
And now it's over to Con for the pronunciation guide.
Woohoo! Welcome back to Con's Declassified Fantasy Pronunciation Guide, where we are referencing the audiobooks narrated by Rebecca Soler to highlight all the new names and places mentioned in this chapter section. We have lots of names under characters today, but some of them are just a recap of characters who have maybe only been mentioned once, or we just got their last name, or things like that. So, first up for characters, we have the Scenarium. This is King Tauri's council, comprised of the 6 ruling nobles of Navarre's provinces and the commander of the Navarrian military, which is currently Melgrin. So the current seats in the Scenarium are occupied by the Duchess of Moraine, the Duke of Caldir, the Duchess of Elsum, the Duke of Luceris, the head of Deaconshire, and the Duke of Tirindor. This was previously Llewellyn, and now at the end of this chapter section, it is Zayden. So for quick clarification here, I saw a lot of confused comments about who or what Llewellyn was at the beginning of Onyx Storm. Yep.
I'm also confused on that.
Yes. So Llewellyn is a city in the province of Tirindor. So the Earl of Llewellyn is the seat of power there, but because of the Treaty of Aresha, the power to represent Tirindor as a whole was transferred from the House of Ryerson to the House of Llewellyn, but has now been transferred back. So all of that to say, I don't think Llewellyn actually has a name or like a first name, at least. They just call him Llewellyn because he's from the House of Llewellyn and represents Llewellyn, but it is a person and a place. Moving forward with characters, we have Queen Mariah of Por Amil.
Heyo.
Kylan.
Okay.
John's got a crush.
All right.
Kylan is also known as Battle Axe from the Assembly, but here we learn that she is an agrarian, which is a plant wielder. Traeger is a healing trained flyer from Iron Flame. Captain Grady is the RSC professor from Iron Flame. Duke Lendell is who fostered Zayden and Liam. Lieutenant Colonel De Grunzi is from the Samara Outpost. Professor Keandra is the flyer professor from Iron Flame, who is now leading Battle Brief with Devera at Basgaiath. Our new wing leaders at Basgaiath are Iris Drew for First Wing, Ara Beinhaven for Second Wing, Lyle Sterling for Third Wing, and Dane Atos for Fourth Wing. Winifred is the top healer at Basgaiath from Fourth Wing, married to Nolan. Other characters mentioned here are Goverson, Colonel Chandler, who's the commander of Retired Riders, Aaron Norris, who built Basgaiath, Nina Schrensauer, who was in Garrick's bed.
Hey-o.
Norris, Gave, Nev, Headley, and Braxton. And then a recap of some of our existing beloved side characters with full names. We have Imogen Cardullo, Bodhi Duran, Garrick Tavis, Rhiannon Matias, Riddick Gamlin, Sawyer Henrik, Brennan Sorengale, aka Lieutenant Colonel Acerai, Marin Zena, Quinn Hollis, Avalyn, Baylor, and Kai. For Texan excerpts, we have one new one in this section called Sharpen the Talon, a Professor's Guide by Colonel Tispany Calthea. And then for dragons, I'm just giving a quick recap on some of them because she started to include just the dragon and not the writer's name without context. So here's some context on those. Cure is Bodhi's green swordtail. Crod is Garrick's brown sword. Yes.
Correction, Chad.
Crod is Garrick's brown scorpion tail, also known as Chad. Atrum is Riddick's brown sword tail. Fjerg is Rhiannon's green dagger tail, also known as Fergie. Glane is Imogen's orange dagger tail. Kruth is Quinn's green scorpion tail. And then Maze and Grime are mentioned here again. They were mentioned first in Iron Flame. These are the two dragons who have been mated for like decades and can communicate across really far distances. And then finally in Gods, there's a quick recap of our 4 gods. Amari is the queen of the gods. Dune is the goddess of war. Zinul, the god of luck. Malik, the god of death. And you know I'm losing my mind in this chapter section because we have a new God, the God of wisdom. However, his name is pronounced a different way every single time it's mentioned. So I think I naturally gravitate toward Hedion, but it is spelled H-E-D-E-O-N. It's pronounced Hedion.
Hey, Hedion. Dion.
Hedion. Choose your own pronunciation journey for that one. But that is the God of wisdom. Ooh. And here we have John with the chapter recaps. Take it away.
We left off with Zayden making a visit to Jack Barlow in his cell. We pick up with Violet following Zayden, not as sneaky as he thinks. She's talking to Andarna as she follows. They start talking about how Andarna's fire, although not outright killing it, damaged the Venon enough before she, you know, bit its head off. But that's something that's never been done before. She caused some damage with Dragonfire, possibly having to do with her changing scales in that moment. We don't know. Violet finally catches up with Zayden talking to Jack. But then Vian and Darna come to the same realization in this moment. If she altered the Venon inadvertently while changing her scales, her kind may know how to master that tactic or that method and possibly, quote-unquote, cure Zayden. 2 weeks later, Vi is out on patrol looking for any remaining Venon in the area. They have a close call, narrowly avoiding a collision with Riddick in the snowy weather, and they head back to the college. Vi asks Taren his thoughts on their plan, and of course he's on Violet's side, just not on Zayden's, especially when it comes to Sigale. They go visit Sawyer, still recovering from his injury. Then they talk about going as a team to search for the seventh breed. But a scream rings out, and Venon have made it inside the college. They head straight for Jack's cell and come upon four Venon. One with silver hair disappears, and they attack the other three until Zayden shows up to finish them off. Violet and Zayden have a little chat. We learn that Sigale still isn't speaking to Zayden, and also that he was able to sense the Venon down there, which is how he knew to head down to the cell. Violet goes to meet with a Cenarium, apparently has a plan, but it all kind of goes to crap as they state that she'll be assigned to a task force led by Grady to go search for the seventh breed, and also that the members will be chosen by him. Their initial plan was to have them choose their own task force, so that kind of sucks. She provides a list of Andarna's demands as well. Llewellyn walks her out and gives her a message from Takaris, which reads, 3 days to hold up your end of the bargain, whatever that means. The next morning, Violet and Zayden wake up and things get heated in this week's segment of Emoji Erotica.
Yay!
Here we go. All right. Sun behind a cloud, googly eyes, yawn, lips, kissy face. These are two in parentheses. So if you remember, these are like combined to kind of make one, but it's a wave and a swan.
Okay.
That one's going to be a tough one if ever y'all try to figure it out. Heart, fire, chest pawn, knuckles, drop pin, two fingers, question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark, green check mark, little dash cloud, thought bubble, chair, chain link breaking, eggplant emoji, fire, lightning, shadows, confounded face.
Hmm. All right.
And that's this week's Emoji Erotica.
Okay.
Good luck figuring it out. But alas, Zayden's control is slipping ever so slightly as things calm down. Cool down, and there's some discoloration on the headboard. Did he channel? He started to, but was able to stop it this time. And I'm sure it won't happen again, or that he won't accidentally lose control, you know? They talk a little about how Erasia's alliance with other provinces can go a long way in defeating the Venon. Mira arrives back with news and messages. She has a new conduit from Felix for Violet, and a practice disc that Trissa used to successfully test nullifying a rune without affecting the others. Kind of a big deal. Then Mira learns about Violet's little task force mission and isn't too happy about it. Mira tells them that they only have about 6 months before a total collapse of the wards. Later, they're in the gathering hall when some first years come in. They're jabbering on about something. More and more Dvarian riders like leave the gathering hall, so they follow the commotion and find one of the riders, actually Aura. She has a flyer with a knife to their throat. The riders are in like a huge rage, wanting a challenge. Obviously, they're like not accepting the flyers or those who left to go to Erasia. Dane tries to talk Aura down and she starts to wield, but Violet steps in. She shows off her power a little and then honestly gives a great female character monologue fit for a leader. She ends up talking her down as some professors show up to give the moment some finality and send everyone on their way. Devera also mentions that the last time they had a lightning and shadow wielder fighting side by side was the Great War. Brennan and Party show up from negotiations with some news, and Darna's demands are mostly met other than being able to choose the task force themselves and of course the whole thing with the flyers, and it also talks for an alliance have failed, at least for now. And then we find out that the king reinstated Zayden's seat on the Cenarium, which means he is now Duke of Tirindor. And then he just takes off on like some mission or something. He leaves. But that night, Violet and party, they hatch plan B. They head down through the healer's quadrant. They get Sawyer. They need him to alter something a rune is etched into, made mostly of iron. So that disc that they got from Trissa was obviously a test for this purpose. And then they make their way to the Wardstone Chamber. But one of the guards, of course, is Mira, having suspected what Violet was up to. Brennan is also already there in the chamber. They basically do to the Wardstone what Triss tested on the practice disc. They undo the rune that caused the flyers not to be able to wield while keeping the other runes intact. And hopefully it worked. They're in battle brief the next day and get news that the nobles are back in negotiations for an alliance. Apparently, helping the flyers was Vi's deal with Takaris, like being able to give them their power back. A few moments later, Dane's dad, now General Atos, storms in and charges Violet with treason. He takes her straight to the Cenarium. She straight up admits what she did, claiming that she acted alone. However, the order that the king and the other nobles signed just that morning pardons her and anyone else allegedly with her. Then Queen Mariah shows up and offers Vi full access to her library, just like Takaris did. And she says she has more in her library than Takaris. General Atos follows Violet out when she leaves, threatening her. Brennan then shows up to his surprise, because he didn't know he was alive. Violet tells him to do his worst, since they can't afford to lose her or her dragons, or Zayden for that matter. So he goes after Second Squad instead, assigning them to a 2-day post at Samara. They arrive at Samara, exhausted, obviously, thankfully, just missed a big battle at the post. The commanding officer basically tells them to get some rest and help where they can. Violet has a bad dream, talks to Rhea about it. As they head out of Zayden's room after some rest, they pass a couple riders talking about Newhall, where Meryn's family is, or where they sought refuge. That area is currently being attacked. Being on the front, they can technically go check it out. It's not going to be illegal. So they take a vote, and it's all in favor as they prepare to go to Newhall.
Yay! I'm crazy. So excited that we are in Onyx Storm. I have some me notes too. Today that are me theorizing because Connor and I don't know anything after this.
That's true, yeah.
And we're all in it together. I'm so excited. Yeah. So let's jump in.
Well, let's start off with the prologue. This is technically just before the prologue truly begins, but I'll bring up the translation note once more like we have in each book. Yep. This time not to say, oh, I guess Jasinia survives, though, but to say Bezgaeth War College survives, because that's kind of what, oh, I thought maybe they'd be just donezo by the end of this story, collapsed, or at least a name change or something. So that sort of took me. I was like, oh, so they're still around by the time she's writing this, at least.
I think they would at least do a rebrand.
Sometime. Yeah.
A new logo, some new colors.
Hopefully not a new mascot, though. We got to keep Pep Talk Dragon.
Yes, that's right. He's got to stick around.
There's nothing wrong with Pep Talk Dragon.
My first note here, this is when she catches Jack talking to Zayden down there in the cell, and he tells Zayden, well, let's just say that silver hair that has you so besotted will be gray like the rest of her, and those weak-ass initiate rings in your eyes won't just last a few days. They'll be permanent. And I was like, who knew Jack had such a vocabulary? Besotted? Wow, man.
Besotted. Wow, you, Jack. Pal.
This was also another mention of silver hair. It didn't have any. He was mentioning that he was going to channel from Violet. But still, it was a silver hair mention, which will come up later. And then this is when Andarna and Violet are talking mind to mind. Andarna says, if I somehow altered that venom inadvertently while changing my scales, then the rest of my kind should know how to master the tactic. And I was thinking, I guess I didn't realize at first that her whole camo thing was her doing something actively, with her magic. I guess I just thought, her scales, which doesn't make sense now that I am talking about it, but that her scales just kind of naturally just blended in.
Like a chameleon.
Yeah, exactly. Just like a passive ability that she had wherever she went. She was able to do that, but which obviously kind of goes into your comment a little bit.
Yeah, I just left the quote that just said when she mentioned that magic feels different when she changes color.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that means, but it seems like it's an active choice to change color. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then, first of all, I don't really know what the magic is in the world, but because I'm not one of those people, but how does that feel different?
Right.
I just wish she would have explained that more, or Violet would actually ask a question every once in a while and we could understand something.
Maybe it's how they said wasn't it the green dragons have a stronger connection to magic? Maybe if she changed to green, she'd be like, oh yeah, I get a little bit of a heavier vibe.
I feel so stable. Yeah.
When she changes to orange, she's like, I'm feeling crazy.
Wild.
Time to party. John and I did talk about this for a while because I also felt confused at the beginning about, like, I think I just didn't realize how much weight this one sentence carried, because then they just seem to immediately be basing all of their plans off of this one passing statement. And so we talked about this for a while and kind of went back to it, like, is this a definite thing or was this just her speculating? But still, even if she is just speculating, this is still more than they had to go on previously. Like, if there is a chance that whatever that magic is could help cure or, like, alter Venon or something. But I did go back to that part in Iron Flame to read that section again where she changes her scales just to get, like, the little description of it. So it says, a shape moves in the cliff behind the dark wielder. No, not a shape. Part of the cliff itself. A giant boulder. A boulder with slivers of golden eyes. It springs forward from the cliff like a projectile, expanding, changing colors, sprouting wings and claws, and black scales.
That's dope.
And then it jumps into the next chapter, which is 63. The dark wielder turns, but he isn't fast enough. Andarna lands directly in front of him, then opens her mouth and breathes fire down upon him, roasting the dark wielder before she snaps her jaws down and rips his head straight off his body. Chomp, chomp. So it is happening, like, as she's in the middle of changing all of that about her physical appearance while she's jumping, and then as soon as she lands, she's breathing the fire. So it did all kind of happen at the same time, but we still don't really know what that means.
But yeah, it is almost like in this prologue just kind of gives a thesis statement for their plans as far as like, you know, like, we will try to find a cure and we will do that by trying to find my people and or like my kind. And exactly. And it's like they just kind of like outline, this is our goals and stuff. But chapter one, this is the
Preach up, blurb.
Where, I don't think Kyle's ever done one. I think he just giggles through all of it every time.
I do. I just enjoy it.
But this is the pre-chat blurb where it says, I will not die today. And then it's actually scratched out in the book and instead says, I will save him, from Violet Sorengale's personal addendum to the Book of Brennan. This was the, like, advertisement for Onyx Storm. Like, this with it, like, scratched out and the I will save him. And it was literally everywhere. And I cannot tell how many times I had to try to, like, stop Kyle from seeing just that. Like, and it'd be like, Onyx Storm with that exact words, because I knew he was, like, starting the book about the time that Onyx Storm came out in real life. Like, we were even sitting at a table once. We went to, like, this bookish bar, and it had this, like, little advertisement. I just turned it around and just, like, he didn't
notice. Was
it on
the back of your copy of the book? Because I literally bought that for her, but didn't look at it. Just put it in the bag.
It was everywhere. It's on billboards. It's in, like, literally every bookstore. And I would just do my best to help you avoid it or look another way and just do anything so that I didn't point out the fact that it was literally in front of your face everywhere. So
you should know that I don't pay attention. Even things you tell me to look at, I have trouble finding.
Yeah, but also, but once you realize it's a thing, it's like in your brain forever. Even if it's not like an active thing, it would end up being like a passive, like, oh, something have to save him. Oh, something's gonna happen to Zayden. Yeah. You know?
I will say, when I saw it in the book, I was like, so you might die today? Like, we're just giving up on that one? Like, maybe you should just keep that in your mantra. You could add without taking away.
Yeah, we can say, and I will.
Yes.
This also came up where she was talking about the crazy, like, snowstorm that they were having and the horrible weather that there was and all this stuff, and then mentioned that because without, you know, without her mom there. And I guess I just didn't realize, like, obviously when Lilith died, that was a big moment for Violet, and that's all I left it with. And so now, like, even just reading that one sentence, it just took me a minute to be like, whoa, this affects, like, a ton of things. Like, obviously she's the general and those things, but, like, even just the actual weather around where they are, like, they haven't had one of these snowstorms in however many years, probably just because Lilith would just push it off and, like, keep the weather somewhat nice and all the different things that she would do. So it's just a major loss on a lot of levels, but that was a big one.
I hope it was accounted for in her salary. That's like, that's another job. It's a full-time job. My next note, speaking of snowstorms, was when Taryn was talking to Andarna, saying to her, your wings won't hold the weight of this ice. And Andarna's immediate next line was, your wings won't hold the weight of this ice. Just mocking Taryn. So it just made me
what it was.
The little SpongeBob meme where he, like, looks like a little chicken going, I thought it was pretty good.
I love that. And then she goes, and yet yours miraculously carry the burden of your ego. Boom, roasted.
Yeah.
Well, and the sass keeps going whenever Taryn lands abruptly and Violet says, well, that was graceful. And he goes, then you fly next time.
Like, get him. I also love that this is like classic dad joke because it's not the first time he's said it.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah. It's so funny. Where he's like, oh, well, did you fall off though? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My next note here is when, before she heads in, she asks Taryn kind of where he stands with like the whole Zayden thing and like her, them deciding to go find a cure. And he replies, meaning, will I support the myriad of ways you plan to court death in the name of curing one who is beyond redemption? And I was thinking about this for a while, like his confidence that Zayden's basically beyond help, even though, you know, he's only channeled once. But there's that idea of how it is that their soul is no longer theirs after channeling. I had like a bunch of questions after this, like, do the really powerful Venon control the magic somehow, or like it almost seems like a well of power in the earth or whatever, can they tell when someone channels? And then this one kind of threw me for a loop, like, what was the relationship between dragons and Venon before the wards went up? Because they obviously both existed for a really long time. Have they just been like fighting each other? Like, what's the deal there? I don't know. This just led me down like a whole path of questions. That's no answers or information.
Welcome
for really any
world.
Of that stuff. Yeah, exactly. So I'm like feeling it there. I'm like, ugh, so many questions, no answers.
Yeah. In the Fables of the Baron, it says there were like three brothers, one bonded a dragon, one bonded a griffin, and one grew jealous and drew power from the earth. But we don't know if Venon have been around longer than the first 6/7, if there were actually 7 riders. I don't know.
I would think it would be after, since they would have had to bond a dragon first
to channel
magic.
That's
how it is in the story. Like, they would have to, somebody would have to be bonded to a dragon in order for the Venon person to get jealous.
So would it have been 7, but the 7th one like turned Venon, and maybe that's why they put the wards up for the first time? Because like they had to have been putting the wards up against something. But yeah, I don't know. We had like a whole rabbit hole conversation about that.
Well, didn't the wards happen 400 years ago? The war was 600.
Was it?
The wards were 400.
But wasn't it the first 6 that helped put up the wards?
400's when they changed the history.
But that's also, was that also unification? Getting all the dates confused.
Because 400 is like how old all the texts are.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes.
Which would have been unification, right? Because that's when they started erasing some of the other cultures and stuff. Okay.
So the wards had been up since like the 600 years ago.
Or
no.
Or were they? Because unification was when they were like telling people they only had a certain time frame to get out of where they lived.
Yeah, you're right. Yes, you're right.
To get within the protection of the wards. So maybe you're right. But I thought it was the first 6 who.
It would have to be the first 6 because she's reading their diary.
Their journals.
Yeah, who made a ward from a ward stone. But it doesn't have to be that ward stone.
All very interesting stuff. Anyway.
Oh, well. Are you Googling, Connor? You have your Googling face.
I found it. So this was, okay, I can actually openly reference this now because this was from a guide that was put out before Onyx Storm.
Nice.
So the Great War was fought between the first 6, their forces and allies, versus enemy General Darrymore and his army from the Barons 600 plus years ago. And around this time, the first 6 bonded with the 6 dragon dens. And then sometime after this, 1 AU, because that's their time, is like before unification and after unification. So we don't actually know when exactly the Great War was, but 1 AU is the unification of Navarre. So these 5-6 provinces unified to become Navarre, and Tirindor was the last to swear fealty. So Tirindor was the 6th, and they unify under the first wards and adopt a common language that mostly blends their existing cultures together. So that was like 600 years ago then, the unification and the wards.
We'll drop the link in the Discord for this episode or something. So they're having all these sassy back and forths and conversations, and they're flying out there in the winter. They finally land, and Taryn starts like crunching the ice off of his wings and like blasting fire at his wings and stuff. One of the things with what John was just talking about, with him saying like, of course, that he'll be with Violet or whatever. And he says, I fly without warming my wings in preparation for carrying heavier weight for longer distances. Does that not answer your question? And I was like, look at Taryn lifting weights. He's just going to the gym, adding all that extra ice on.
That's
there.
Right.
Dad strength.
Uh-huh. It just made me laugh.
I had to mention this, that Violet kept her mom's personal journals. And this was like, not a theory, but this was something I mentioned at the end of Iron Flame that I was hoping we would see. So I just wrote, aha, here. We've already seen, I think, one pre-chat blurb from her journal, mm-hmm. maybe two. Mm-hmm. But I imagine we might see some more, but I'm really hoping that we get some good info nuggets, like with content, like within the chapters, instead of just, you know a line and a pre-chat blurb. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping we get some stuff.
For me, it was the line that she said when she mentions them, where it says that maybe the god of death will curse me for keeping them. And that is a terrifying sentence. And she needs to stop saying anything about the god of death and playing with him and being mad at him and stealing from him and commanding getting cursed him. From him. Like, she just needs to leave him alone.
Was that a hymn rule or was that a college rule, though, where they were like, no, you can't keep their things? Or is that actually the god saying, like, no, you need to get rid of it all?
Oh, well.
This is my theory. And I guess now, I don't know, maybe I've mentioned it before. I feel like I'm open to mention theories now. My theory is that Navarre, as a continent, made this rule so people would burn history. That it's a made-up thing.
Nice. Yep.
Yeah.
And people will burn all of this stuff, and so that there's no little, like, journals or pictures or whatever of Venin or whatever else.
Yeah, because we even have the guide to, I think it's Major Rorley's Guide to Appeasing the Gods, second edition. Mm-hmm. Like, if that's where they're getting all of that information from, that could be completely made up and not as old.
Especially because Taryn acts like the gods aren't real.
Yeah. Right. And they certainly, like, three books in, have not been active at all. If they're ever going to, show up and actually do something in this series, I feel like it would have at least been somewhat hinted at. But the fact that it's like, first of all, if you're the god of death, people are going to die eventually. Unless you have to be on time, there's no rush. Like, if someone does something bad, I'm like, well, I'll see you someday, and we'll settle up then. But I'm not going to be like, oh, you got to come early.
That makes you a nice god of death, because from some books and things, that's not the case.
I mean, like, why put more on my plate, you know?
Sure. I'm a busy god.
Yeah. People are dying everywhere. I cannot focus on you at college.
And then this is just another funny moment, because I freaking love Riddick with all of my heart. And I did not catch this on my first read, because it's in the background. So Imogen comes up and she's talking to Violet about her not sleeping in the same bed as Zayden, and like this whole serious conversation, which in my first read, I'm freaking out because Zayden's a Venin and I'm just like trying to figure it out. And like in the background, we get these like little tiny sentences where Rhiannon goes up to the door and she yells, Riddick, did you freeze this door shut? She shouts from the top of the steps, yanking on the door handle of the rotunda with her full body weight. And then they continue the conversation with Imogen and Violet. And then she's like, get back here right now and fix it. And then they continue the conversation, whatever. And then it just says, Riddick laughs hysterically from inside the rotunda.
That's great.
Oh, Riddick. He's the best. Oh, I love him so much. And like, literal war is happening and horrible things. And just like,
pranking
they're
people.
On their way to go see Sawyer, who's got his leg cut off. Like, so much seriousness. And then he's just like, literally freezing her out. It's just hilarious. I love
it. So good. Speaking of all the seriousness, though, this was on my first read. I tried to start listening to this book at work the day that it came out because I had to be in the office all day, but I just like couldn't help myself. I like had to start it, you know. But I got to the last few lines of this chapter where a cadet screams that everyone's dead and there are Venin inside Basgaiath, and my notes are all like all caps shouting, oh my god, my heart just dropped, reading this at work was a mistake. I was freaking out.
Did you stop or did you keep going?
Oh no, I definitely kept going. But all my notes are like shouty all caps, like right in the beginning, because I was freaking out and I couldn't visibly react because there were people around me who didn't know I was listening to a book.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. So that leads us into chapter 2, where this pre-chat blurb.
Pre-chat.
Thank you.
All right.
Blurb.
Just like, okay. Oh, Kyle. Yes.
Woohoo. Kyle's pre-chat debut.
Welcome to the party.
The party. So in this pre-chat blurb, it says, but only once have the six most powerful walked the continent simultaneously. Mm. And after this comment about how the last time a lightning and shadow wielder walked the earth at the same time was in the Great War, I was like, ooh, so who will the six be now? Or was it actually seven? Because I'm still stuck on that. And then it just led me to like Throne of Glass era, all the players back in the unfinished game kind 1,000%. Of vibes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I definitely never thought of it as seven until reading these notes.
You're welcome.
I'm just still stuck in the six, but there are seven breeds of dragons. So it would make sense that there's some mysterious seventh original writer out there, I would think. But like also Andarna was left 600 years ago. So did they not get bonded? They were just like, nah, we out.
Maybe they disagreed with it.
Yeah, maybe they chose not to bond. Yeah. So
you
there
could
were
have
seven.
One egg, but none of us.
Maybe she's an original six. Seven. She's the seventh. Violet. Mm. Or something.
Mm. Oh, that's interesting.
Like if she's the first to bond. That
the
kind
seventh
of a dragon.
Breed.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because they said that no one else had ever had one, right?
That they, I mean,
well, they
nobody
didn't,
knew they
existed. They didn't, like, know it. Yeah, they didn't know about him. Mm. She said she waited 650 yeah. years to hatch. So that would have been before the Great War, yeah. before the wards.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But I totally believe that all of the original signets, they are totally going to be a thing again. Be used somehow together. Like, it just feels yeah. like that makes sense. As yeah.
But if two of them are already there, like, have the other ones already manifested too? Like, that's what I want
to
know.
I kind of feel like it has to. We just yeah. don't right? know what they are.
And it doesn't, yeah, I was going to say, I would be willing to bet that one of them has to be some sort of intrinsic. Like, that would be one of the very first signets made.
So there would be, like, pure power and then some kind of, like, mind signet mm-hmm. and then...
Maybe a yeah. super strong, just purely elemental signet, like they have fire and ice and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and then, like, if Bodhi was one of the most powerful writers, like you were talking about in... Bodhi. Yeah. You were talking about that in, I think it was episode 9, because he was one that they called to, like, mm-hmm. bleed on the Wardstone or whatever. Like, yeah. he was one of the most six powerful in residence. But we were like, but his signet is yeah to counter other signets
yeah
so I don't know if that would be included in like a first six kind of situation but anyway know. Just a fun thing to think about
yeah I'm this is all new for me and I'm so spiraling right now but I'll keep thinking about it later.
This was my other first read notes of panic here. So the first one was, my stomach is in knots. Holy shit, how is she doing this to me on chapter 2? This was me still at work, freaking out. And then when it says, there are no survivors, I'm all caps. I'm about to cry, Rebecca. What is this?
There no were seriously so on. Many people dead in the second chapter.
Yeah.
It was wild.
And they had just been like chilling in the room with Sawyer, like while all of that was happening.
Mm-hmm. I know. Well, great. This was for me the same exact thing you were going through in the second chapter. And we see the how many of them had Imogen and I seen on our walk to the infirmary without even realizing it. So I flip back to chapter 1, like just a couple pages, and just to see like, oh yeah, we passed by all these scribes talking to all the people to like get the different stories. And then to find out that no, those are all actual Venon literally killing everyone. I was like, oh my God, I am reading a Rebecca Yarros book. I can't just be casually reading this. What am I thinking? Every single thing matters. Every even silly sentence like that. I had to turn high alert because I was not mentally prepared stepping into this book. So
same.
It's wild.
Well, they get to the cell here and they see the four Venon. Vi notices the one that says her long silver braid swings free of her hood as her attention whips in our direction. And her eerie gaze jumps to mine and widens slightly under a faded tattoo on her forehead. A smirk tilts her mouth and she disappears. And then it says something like Violet feels a breeze or something going past her, like a strain of her hair goes or something like that. First of all, that's kind of sweet. That was pretty cool. Second of all, too much silver hair reference for me already. For this to be a coincidence, and I am now right? on silver hair watch, so
nice.
It means silver something. Means something. And thirdly, what's the tattoo that she had? This is driving me up a wall.
Yeah,
I don't think all Venon have it. And I was thinking, well, maybe she's a marked one. But then, like, were there marked ones before the 107? Right, there weren't.
No.
Right,
that so we know of.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I would assume not. But I'm, I'm like really like, what is that? What does that mean? Because I'm trying to think if any of the ones described at Resin had a tattoo, or even the Sage at first. I don't think so. So this is something different, especially if she's not. I mean, she could. This one could be a Sage. I don't know if she's got that kind of power that she can just freaking disappear.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think the only mention of a tattoo that we've had so far in this series is Riddick's. Riddick got a tattoo of a dragon on his neck.
Oh, that's yes. right.
After getting his relic yeah. from his dragon.
That's right.
And it doesn't say it looks like, it literally just says tattoo. It doesn't say it looks like a rune. It doesn't say it looks right. like, you know, like a, yeah. a pattern or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So it really gives us
really
nothing.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. She did kind of vanish instantly.
Well, and the rush of wind makes me think like somehow she went past her.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's
like,
what I was assuming.
She didn't just like vanish in thin air. Yeah. Freaking sweet at the same time.
Yeah, I know. Kind of is. Also freaking sweet, though, was seeing the squad fight together in this scene. And I didn't catch this on my first read, but this moment where Riddick is like, drop, Vi! And she, like, drops to her knees and he makes, like, a sheet of ice for her to slide on to, like, miss whatever was about to hit her. That was really cool.
Yeah, for me, it was the moment when she's, like, at knife point with one of the Venin and he was like, you can't kill me or whatever. And she was just like, I won't have to because shadows quake at the edge of the chamber and a corner of my mouth rises. Like, she knew Zayden was there before she even saw him, and it was freaking sweet. And what an entrance for Zayden in this book.
Yes.
Amazing. And then a muscle in his square jaw ticks.
I missed that one. Wow. Cheers. What's everybody drinking today?
Water.
Water burger. Dr. Pepper.
Sorry. Water burger?
Water burger.
I just finished my Athletic Brew Co. and now I'm over to water.
Got my neutral vodka seltzer. Water burger.
I just wrote this in here because it made me laugh. This is after they have like a debrief about all the Venin coming in. I think it's like Colonel Pancheck. Is that his title? And yeah, he like debriefs everyone about how the Venin were there and the all the things. I don't even remember the rest of the sentence, but it was like something like Pancheck will do something, something. But it was written as Pancheckle. Pancheckle. Like Pancheck, comma, LL. Or like apostrophe. I'm so sorry. Yep. Pancheck, apostrophe, LL. Like Pancheck will. Pancheckle.
It's like a board game I've never played. You want to play some Pancheckle? It
just made me laugh. From Hasbro.
Pancheckle. It's so funny. Okay, anyways, that was just funny to me. And then Violet was all like, but do you love me? And Zayden was like, I could reach the rank of Maven, lead armies of dark wielders against everyone we care for, and watch every vein in my body turn red as I channel all the power of the continent, and I would still love you. What I did doesn't change that. I'm not sure anything can. This is highlighted like a bajillion times from people on the internet or like in my Kindle. And yeah, I guess that's cute to a certain extent, but like I'm freaking out that this is some sort of foreshadowing.
That was my note.
No, I'm like, this is not okay. Like, we're gonna reach the rank. This is this his thesis statement. I'm going to reach the rank of Maven. Right. I will lead armies of dark wielders against everyone we care for. Every vein in my body will turn red as I channel all the power. But I'll still love you. No big deal. And then Violet's like, he cares about me. I'm like, girl.
He'll kill everyone I know, but he'll still love me.
It's freaking me out. Man.
That was my note. I wrote, Rebecca, if this is foreshadowing, I swear for God.
But for real. It's but freaking for real, though. Me out.
Yeah. Like and after that, he goes on to say, like, oh, I can sense the Venin the same way they can sense me. That's how I know I'm one of them. That sort of thing. After explaining that he's a lost cause. And then he just ends it with, like, scared yet? Because he was like, you should be scared of me. He flips his bangs out of his hair. So you should be scared of me. This is the body of a killer. But I just wrote, if I have to deal with an angst-filled Zayden turning more and more Venin along with becoming a deeper gray on the morality scale while being excused by, but he's still in there and on the outside he's still hot, I don't know if I'm gonna make it through this. Like, if that's what's happening, I just don't know if I can make it.
Love this for you, Kyle. Yep. Okay, so chapter 3, we got another pre-chip.
Preacher.
I love this. In this epigraph, we get recovered unsent correspondence of General Lilith Sorengale again. And this one's about Violet. And there's a part that says, in her first two liaisons, and I went, with who? And then I love the part where she says, God's help her, my love. I'm afraid our daughter has atrocious taste in men. This made me laugh out loud in my first read. Also, probably something my own parents said to each other when I was a teenager.
No comment.
And probably something Lauren said to our other friends when we were in college. That's funny. Until I met John, of course. Love of my life. Love you so much. But also, there was
I didn't know you before you guys got married, so, you know.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I get it.
But also, this is like the second time we've gotten unsent correspondence. But I feel like if it was from her journal, wouldn't it just say like from the personal journal of or something? Like unsent correspondence makes it sound like she wrote this in a letter to Papa Sorengale and didn't send it. Because he was dead, question mark?
Yeah, sort of like a cathartic writing to him.
I know, like, that makes me so sad. Did she know he was dead and she was writing to him after? Or were they separated when he died for some reason and she didn't know for a while? Like, well,
he died when Violet was pretty young, right?
Like, she was, I forget how old she was when he died.
It was only like 6 years or 5 years ago, because it was a year after Brennan died.
Maybe Mama Sorengale was on like a mission.
Oh yeah, maybe she was gone.
And she was writing stuff and then it just never ended up getting sent or something and was found in all her stuff. Because obviously like Dane's dad is now the general person and assumedly took over like her office and wherever else. And so Violet didn't go clean up all her stuff. Like somebody had to go through it and put it somewhere.
Sure,
for them to find potentially whatever other random things to find.
Oh, well, and if her dad died 5 years ago and she's had two boyfriends, that was probably after her dad died.
They're not boyfriends. Yeah. They're just liaisons.
Liaisons, right. So maybe it was more of a therapeutic thing to just like write letters to him as their kids continued to grow, because she obviously wasn't close to her children.
And probably couldn't feel like she could be herself with anybody else because she's the general. Poor Lilith.
And she made a storm to carry the letters up to the sky.
Stop. That's depressing. Kyle. No. How did they recover these letters, though, to find them unsent?
It's got
to
come back down eventually. It's not actually going to.
That's so sad.
Violet here is reflecting a little bit more on Zayden being Venom now. She says, just because he can sense them doesn't mean he gave up part of his soul, right? And this led me down another path of questions. What if it's not part of your soul? What if it takes slash trades part of your power? And then like the more you channel, the more power it takes, even though like you still get power in return somehow, there's some kind of like weird trade there. And then also like, where does the magic stem from? Like where to source? I know we talked a little bit about this because there's obviously like a massive amount of that energy in the hatching grounds. So has it like always stemmed from there and it just kind of, you know, disperses out from there? I don't know. More questions without answers.
So as we were talking about this, I thought this thought was really interesting about about it like taking or like being a trade of power almost. And so as we were talking about it, I likened it to like a high from a drug where you get like an influx of power, like you experience a high, but then every time you come back down, you're coming lower and lower on a, like your baseline is lower and lower, where like you become more and more dependent on channeling maybe. And that's why every time you channel, it takes more of a toll on your physical appearance or something. So I don't know. I thought that was interesting. But then we were also talking about like where the magic in the earth comes from. And like John mentioned the veil. Then we started talking about the mage lights and how they said the mage lights are powered by like just power that kind of radiates off of bonded riders. And it's not something that they are consciously giving. It's just like something that is kind of, you know, it's just because of their proximity. So like, is it the same with, you know, the magic from the veil, that it's just the proximity of the dragons, but then also like the riders? And if that's, is that all of the magic from the earth, or is there a different sort of core of magic?
Well, and you would think that wherever potentially griffins are made, hatched, whatever, because they also have some sort of magic and bond. And then is the new hatching grounds in Arisha full of like the same kind of magic? Is that, is it just like that kind of a thing where these creatures are made or born, have the most magic, you know, like so there's however many different plots around, you know, and obviously the veil has been the most untouched from however long because it's been under the wards for 600 years or whatever. And so maybe that's why everyone's saying it's the most, but maybe it's not the only original source. It's just maybe the most powerful source.
But another thing would be, is the source refillable? Because like Viscount Takar has built that dome out of stones that had been drained so that they couldn't take more. So like the place in Resin that was drained, could that ever be refilled? If there was a whole area devoid of magic taken by the Venom, could dragons make a new hatching ground there and refill the magic that way? Or would they say, oh, that's barren land, we can't use that as a hatchery?
Like the Barrens, the giant part of the map that we don't really have any information on?
Yeah. But yeah, because like if that's the case, you would think that the Venom would want to keep some sort of dragons and bonded alive because of people like Violet, who they say, well, we could just take her power instead of drawing from the earth. That's a renewable resource, not something that we can drain once and be done with.
And that, it keeps making me come back to the quotes from Fourth Wing. She says like, I am the power of the sky and all the storms that have ever been. But then the Venom says something almost identical to her, like you could command the power of the sky or something in book one. So like, I don't know if that is actually a thing, or if she's just talking about her lightning because it's like storm related.
And then she supposedly is like raw power. It's just lightning because that's what she's comfortable with. So
that's the shape that it takes. So yeah, so I don't know if that's literal or not. Okay, and then toward the end of, for the rest of chapter 3, we get two more jaw flexes. So double cheers. Please don't die.
Almost died on that one. That was a little dangerous. Drink responsibly. Okay, so chapter 4. This is coming out of Emoji Erotica. And Zayden says, I can't afford to lose control around you. Not even the edge of it. And it's because he had just channeled a little tiny bit on the headboard or whatever. I had read this book when it first came out and then was rereading with us for the actual series, which was a wild thing to do, to be reading the third book while reading the first and the second book at the exact same time. But whatever. And so I had gotten to this part and just was cringing every other time that they had Emoji Erotica in other books, because every single time when Zayden would like whatever, and he would always say that he like completely lost control, or like he never lost control like that ever before, and his shadows would go wild and all the things. And so it was just like this whole moment that knowing like this moment was coming, but you know, that this so moment was coming, but he wouldn't be. So from the very first book, from the very first time, from the very first moment, it was described that way, all to be this moment where now he can't lose control at all and they can't be together, and just kind of diabolical writing from Rebecca Yarros.
My next note here is they mention in the scenarium possibly that Llewellyn seems to think he can get, this would be Zayden's father's sword back from King Tauri. And as I was reading this, there was a lot of moments that I had like this in this first couple of chapters, but I wrote, did we even know about the sword? Like, what's going on here? That's it. That's my note.
I don't think we did.
I don't think, like, that was the first time I remember being like, okay, I guess there's a sword involved.
Yeah.
I got my googly eyes on.
It's because you do it on the computer and you get away from our screen and then you go like this with your tongue.
I did think that.
It helps.
For several things as well, John. Like, there were some things in this book where I was like, I don't think I've heard that before, but I'm going to keep rolling. Like, it's.
Yes. Yeah. First few chapters were really bad. I had to, like, reread them. I made it to, like, chapter 3, and then I had to go back and reread it.
And we're coming straight off of it. I can't imagine people who haven't read for a year being like, what is going on? Yeah.
That was us.
That was me.
I think maybe this was mentioned very briefly in passing in book 1.
In book 1?
Mm-hmm. Maybe, or maybe, like, one of the first times he talked to Violet about his dad.
Yeah, maybe.
It's not been very
in such
often.
A way that it wasn't like a big deal. He didn't make like a, I gotta get this sword back. It was just like a, all our things were taken, and that makes sense because we were rebels or whatever.
This just says it was only mentioned that it was taken after the execution of Fenn Ryerson.
But it wasn't like a, maybe I must have it back. Like, my family legacy sort of thing. It was just like, they have my sword.
This is just a personal thing from me and Kyle. We were talking about this the other day, but this is Violet. When she and Zayden were talking in the room and they were like just back and forth and things were like pretty domestic and they were getting ready together. And then all of a sudden other people showed up and he like turned into this total jerk again. It said, there's the hard ass everyone else gets. I don't fight the urge to smile. There's a huge part of me that likes that I'm the only one who gets his softer edges. And I'm like 99.9% sure I have thought the literal exact same thing whenever Kyle and I were first dating. Because I know, it's so dumb. But I'm pretty sure it's one of the reasons I love Zayden so much, because it's also one of the reasons I fell in love with Kyle. Because he's so introverted and can in person, I think more than in the podcast, but in person, just because he is just so to himself, and other people be like, openly talk to you, and Kyle's just like, all right, cool, you know. And some people are like, wow, this guy like totally hates me. Like, whatever. But that's just like Kyle being Kyle. It works because I talk so much, and so in person it works because Kyle doesn't, and it's wonderful. But I think sometimes people think he comes across harsh, and so I always just appreciated that I got his softer side, or he opens up and he shares with me and all of those things. And cute. I just thought it was cute. So shout out to Kyle, and I love you so much. Okay.
Oh, you're welcome.
You're welcome.
And if you ever meet Kyle in person, don't expect him to talk back. Just he'll just be there. He's great, and he really will enjoy your company. He just won't talk around you, but that's okay.
I think the moment that I realized that too when we were dating was, there's a specific time that Lauren had millions of acquaintances at our college, and there was like a time that she and I were together walking along, one of these many acquaintances came up to us and started talking to him or to her, and then she turned to me and she's like, you hate me, don't you? And I was like, my instant response was, I have no idea who you are. Lauren was like, you can't say that to me. You've met her like 5 times. I was like, I have no recollection of this.
But I was like, I definitely don't hate you. Like, that would require thinking about you as much as loving you would. And I just don't. You're not on the radar. You're not either emotion. Sorry.
I remember one time whenever you just like, we were all sitting around the lunch table and everybody was just totally normal and fine. And you just got up out of nowhere and walked and put your stuff away and then walked out. And everyone looked at me like, is he okay? Is everything wrong? Like, whatever. And I was like, no, I'm pretty sure he's just done eating. And
dude, that sounds like no need to say goodbye to you
or anything. Yeah. And everyone looked at me and I felt like they looked at me for the answer because they knew I would know. And I was just, it was like a whole dumb moment for me. But anyways, I married him. So obviously it worked. Yeah.
Fair. I was kind of like that with like staying over at people's places in college. Like if there was a party or something, I would fall asleep. But then if I woke up in the middle of the night, I remember one specific time that I did that. And I walked like 2 or 3 miles back to my car.
Oh my gosh.
Like at a mall or something. I was like, I'm not comfortable. I'd rather go home. So I just walked back to my car and went home.
Wow. There's a lot of times that people would be like, where did you go? I was like, I left. And they're like, oh, we were having so much fun. And I'd be like, I left 2 hours ago. Obviously you didn't notice. So like, that wasn't a big part of the dynamic.
Yeah. I did try to do that once where I stayed overnight at a party and then I like wanted to leave, but the person who brought me to the party left. Oh. Didn't tell me.
Oh my gosh.
He didn't also stay the night. I wanted to go to this party and look hot and talk to John. That was like
It was playing hard to get, huh, John?
I think I drunk week, but before you started dating, got it.
Yes, I think I drunk Snapchatted you from the bathroom.
John was not there.
Yeah.
Oh, that party.
That Snapchat.
Still has the snap saved to his phone. Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Anyway.
Yeah, we got way off on a rabbit trail.
Speaking of wild nights, Imogen makes a snide comment here about whoever's bed Garrick was in last night, Nina Schrensauer, that skank. And he says, careful, Imogen, you sound a little jealous. And she's like, why would anyone be jealous of a flyer? Like, she brushes it off. But this made me kind of sad, though, too, because in book one, Zayden's like, no, like, Imogen was looking at Garrick. Like, she has a thing for Garrick. And then this whole moment was a little sad, knowing that. Poor Imogen. She probably was jealous.
Well, and knowing that, like, Zayden can read intentions. Like, we know for a fact that Imogen has feelings for Garrick. It's not just she's kind of looking whatever. Like, he knows for a fact. And so it is sad for Imogen.
She should just go up to him and be like, you should forget about that girl. Just erase the memory.
Oh, just erase the memory. That's
erase the memory of any other crush he has.
Oh, oh that's diabolical.
If it gets too bad, she can erase her own crush. She's big.
Oh, that's so, so sad. Well, and like part of me thinks this is like cute banter with like, oh, you're jealous, whatever. But like Garrick actually did sleep with someone else, which does suck for Imogen. Like,
and she's phenomenal in bed. What is he doing? I know. What did you say?
He said, but go Garrick.
Nina Schrensauer. Wow.
Clearly not too worried about Violet in Satan's bed. Okay, well, my next note, I just think it's funny that we brought up Battle Axe again. That Battle Axe actually has a name, Kylan, and that they're an agrarian, which is a plant wielder, which is really cool. It's a power we've not heard of yet that's like bonded this way, and I want to know so much more. Obviously, they were able to like manipulate the wood on the, like, because it's like a little wood thing that has the runes. That's the word I was looking for. But like, is it just trees? I just want to know all the things.
It's like rural. Farming, so I would assume it's just pretty vaguely plant stuff.
It doesn't fit battle axe. I was expecting like another metallurgist. Metallurgist.
Which is also another word. Maybe she could like groot herself, make herself like a living tree.
I was just thinking about that.
Groot herself.
Roots to trip up people and stuff.
Yeah.
Make little groots.
Yeah, you play a ranger in D&D, Lauren. You should know how dangerous plants can be.
That's true. We can do some pretty
cool things. You should know.
Anyways, but also we learned from this moment that they can change the wards by manipulating the like actual metal or the thing that rune is on. So it obviously like they do it to just a regular rune here that's on this little wood, whatever. And then later we know that they do it to the actual wards. So I wonder if it will get used again sometime in some other way with some other material that a rune is on in some sort. So
probably not.
One and done. I think it's done.
Okay, so Right here, Brennan tells Mira, Queen Mariah hopes the seventh breed might know how to defeat the Venon, given the age of Andarna's egg. And this was just crazy to me that this is, like, public knowledge now, at least among leadership, so much that the queen of, like, a different kingdom knows this information. But does this mean that none of the dragons have knowledge of this from that long ago? I just, like, if Taryn is over 100, that's not that many generations removed for the dragons. So, like, even if they would have been cut off from other, like, provinces or, like, the Isle Kingdoms or whatever during unification and because of the wards, it's just kind of crazy to me that, like, the Venon weren't kept secret from the dragons. Like, they've known about them this whole time, right? So I just, that's just kind of crazy to me. There's nothing.
Yeah. And even the things that, like, Violet's talking to Taryn all the time, asking his advice, and he's like, oh, I'm gonna let you make your own decisions. I'm like, is that what every dragon is? Like, they know everything, but they're like,
right?
Hey, we're staying above it. You know, the Empyrean says we're not supposed to give you information. And then I'm like, why though?
Right?
It sounded like to me that they were trying to hide Andarna for so long and only maybe Taryn knew and the, like, leadership or the elders of the dragons. It didn't sound like everyone knew, to me at least, about Andarna.
No, not about Andarna. I mean about the Venon. But then the fact that, like, they, it was such a big deal to keep it a secret, and now everybody knows not only that she's the seventh breed, but also that her egg is as old as it is. Like, all of that is just kind of, I was like, oh, I mean, okay, so we're just, like, talking about it.
Well, and, like, Queen Mariah and everyone else on the Cenarium aren't writers, so, like, they don't have dragons to hide information from them. Only Zayden is, because she even's like, I step up that. And all of them are in their whatever color, but only one's in black on the end and whatever, you know, like, none of them are writers. And Queen Mariah would have been a Griffin writer at that, because she's from Poor Meal. So
yeah, I didn't think about that.
Whatever information the Griffins would even know, I doubt they would know about the seventh breed, or which makes it even more public knowledge if it's outside of the writers and outside of the dragons. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
And then Brennan's jaw ticks toward the end of chapter four. So cheers.
And at the beginning-ish of chapter five, they're talking about the, like, Venon attack they just went through. Violet's like, oh, one of them had silver hair. Ooh. And Riddick says, well, everyone's hair eventually turns gray. That's, like, the least weird thing about yesterday's attack. And Riddick downplaying this sort of makes me think Rebecca's just trying to throw us off a trail here. Like, with what John was saying earlier, like, him being like, no, don't worry about it. It's like, kind of trying to downplay something we should probably be paying attention to.
My note here was, like, no, it's not the weirdest thing, Riddick. I want to know.
Well, and during this whole conversation, it says, setting my dagger to an apple and peeling it in one long ribbon. And I was like, ah, Violet keeping the dried fruit business up and running now that Zayden has graduated.
Stocking up on oranges now that Jack's alive again.
That's true.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah. And this is sort of where they all run out to this incident where there's a fight breaking out in the courtyard and everyone's like, literally chanting, fight, fight, fight. Dane yells out to them, find your squads and de-escalate at all costs. And Riddick says, if only we were taught those techniques. And I was like, yeah, these are, like, usually the first options learned in these scenarios. But given the bloodlust of Navarre, I get why. You wouldn't want your students finding answers if they aren't taught how to ask questions. But it is interesting that, like, after I reread it, things like de-escalate at all costs. Because usually it might just say, like, just de-escalate. At all costs makes it sound like you can kill them if you need to. Yeah.
As long as everything stops.
Yeah, as long as everyone, as soon as it stops, we're good.
Yeah, and then I was cracking up at Dane and Aura literally having a codex off here. Like, they're just shouting, like, Article 4, Section 2. And they're trying to quote it at each other and cutting each other off. Like, this is like a classic Dane Atos fight.
Kiss.
Kyle.
Made for each other. Mm-hmm. And then Arik is described here as being almost as tall as Zayden with a menacing glare that keeps other cadets silent. And I think I might officially have a new book boyfriend.
Connor.
Jones looking around. Yeah. He's super tall. He's like a broody secret prince on a secret mission to secretly be a good guy. I think I'm kind of here for that. That's all.
For whatever reason in my head, the first years are like, young, like they're just like, and Arik's like not an option because he's young and I'm not supposed to think that's hot. That's where I'm at in my head. Same with Sloane. Like, Sloane is Liam's little sister. She's young, she's little, she's not,
I mean,
she's
Zayden,
she's not 21 or 22
just 1 year
or
younger than them. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Zayden went for an underclassman. Dane did when Violet showed up. There's a lot of hawking at this school.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like we didn't get a lot of descriptions of Arik in Iron Flame, maybe. He just, like, hasn't had a lot of page time, but I'm here for it.
I'll keep an open mind. See if I get there.
Yeah.
All right, this is some big, big, big drinkies, everyone, because this is Violet's first jaw clench when this is all happening, and it says, my jaw clenches. Oh, John, keep going. Ooh, chug, 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 chug. Somebody in Discord did ask if we would have an episode where we did actual shots every time it was a drink.
Oh, dear.
This is another thing that I think is funny, too, that Jacinia is transcribing, like, every moment a jaw clench. Oh, gotta have that in there.
Yep. Jason is drunk.
It's an old scribes game.
Yeah.
So this is still during the Aura Dane codex off. It says, Aura reaches for her shoulder as if forgetting she already used and lost that dagger. And my note was, is Imogen trying to, like, wipe her memories here to make her hesitate? I just thought that was, like, an interesting thing for her to include in this sequence, that she reached for it like she forgot she already used it.
Yeah, that is interesting. I always thought Imogen had to, like, actually touch someone to wipe their memory. Oh. I guess we see that when they're at the library and they go into the archives to get the books, and she has to, like, she, like, physically touches the guy who's, like, asleep or whatever, but who's to say it doesn't grow?
Yeah,
she couldn't, because that would be kind of scary, but she could just do that at will.
Yeah, if it was something small like that, maybe. I don't know. I guess I forgot that we have seen her actually use the Sigmet, because I feel like most of the time we don't see that happen on page. It's just like,
behind
the scenes. Violet's been help, or Imogen's been helping this way. Yeah,
yeah, interesting.
But you know what Imogen can't wipe away the memory of? The absolute perfection of mood reader candles. Seriously, these things smell so good. They'll have you questioning if you accidentally wandered into a millionaire's penthouse right after he stepped out of the shower, towel hanging just right, your space instantly upgraded, your vibe immaculate, your enemies jealous. If your room currently smells like bad decisions and takeout, do yourself a favor and grab one or five. Use code FRIENDS10 at moodreadercandles.com and thank us later.
That takes us to chapter 6, where Violet steps up to fight against Aura and says, you see, Dane's too honorable to wield in a challenge, but you'll find that my sense of morality has learned to waver. And my comment here was, is Violet going morally gray? Like, ooh, is she going to be our new morally gray baddie? Because Zayden's just straight up gray, literally, because he can, like, you know, suck the color out of things and turn it all gray and sad. And so so is Violet, because she's always been rules, 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 codex, codex, codex. So
true.
Interesting. I mean, kind of.
She knows the rules, but I think she's more of, like, knowing the rules to be like, but here's what I can get away with, because it doesn't say anything about this. You know?
Yeah, that's fair.
I guess she's not like Dane was with the codex. Yeah. Yeah, she, like, bent the rules hardcore. But I do think she's grayer than she used to be.
Yeah, for sure.
But she never, she never straight out broke the rules.
Yeah, not, like, until she, like, literally in a challenge rebelled.
And, yeah, and, you know, using your Sigmet in a challenge or, like, trying to wield is against the rules. So.
And she's saying here her sense of morality, not even, like, her loyalty to the codex or whatever. Yeah, this is a little bit deeper, I think. Yeah. Love this for her.
My first note in this was Violet's reaction to Halden's name, where she was like, I blanch. Halden's here. And I guess this means that they were an item at one time. And then Arik shoots her, like, a knowing look, and she returns a glare. And it's like, okay, so yeah, they used to boink.
Yeah, mine for this was when she in her brain says, I'm going to be sick. And then Darna's like, why are you going to be ill? And Taryn goes, Halden? Taryn uses slowly, and I swear I can feel his non-existent eyebrow raise. Like, Taryn gets it, and Darna not so much yet.
I had no. This went right over my head, bro. Mm-hmm.
My first read note was all caps. Did she date Halden?
That was it. I was like, she had that reaction, and I was like, they used to date. And then she gave the glare to him, and I was like, yeah, they totally used to date. Because Arik's his brother. He would know.
Yeah.
Yeah, for real. Well, and yeah, how much she knows Arik and has seen him around, obviously. But they're talking about Violet's amazing speech she gave when everyone was at the fight or whatever. And Arik says she'd be a great politician or general, maybe. Definitely nobility. And then Zayden goes, with that speech, at least a duchess. And we didn't know yet that he just became the Duke of Tirindor, but now we do. Zayden.
The shoulders thinking about are shimmying.
The future. Make her your duchess.
And she's standing there like, not a queen? What's wrong with you?
Well, it's funny because her response is like, yeah, none of that actually. Yeah. Like, Nuzan kind of shut him down, but she didn't know.
I think this is Llewellyn talking, but they're talking about some of the negotiations and stuff, and he says the now negotiated accord with Aurelia. He glances at Zayden, which will be signed in the morning once the scribe finishes drafting. And I was thinking here, he gave that little look to Zayden, wondering if Zayden made another deal or something to like help make this happen, which I guess, I don't know if him like just not flat out denying the king kind of reinstating him was kind of his version of that, like him, you know, accepting that reinstatement moving forward. I wonder if that was part of it, but.
Because doesn't Llewellyn lose his title?
Yeah.
To give it back to Zayden? Yeah. So maybe this is like, I still have it until the morning or something like that.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's
point, I don't know.
Before he gets demoted back to Earl.
Of Llewellyn. Llewellyn, yes. Earl of Llewellyn.
Llewellyn of Llewellyn in the House of Llewellyn.
Yes.
My last note for this chapter was whenever Violet was thinking to herself about Zayden, he'll never go too far, never lose his soul. So I nod. And my only note was, yeah, sure, 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 sure. Sure he won't. Sure he won't.
Right.
In the words of yeah, Justin totally. Bieber, I don't think so.
What? Does Justin Bieber say that? What am I missing?
We start chapter 7 with my note here, the pre-chat blurb.
Pre-chat! Blurb.
This is from one of Lyra's excerpts or from her journal, whatever. It says, if I'm to be court-martialed for helping Braxton defend his people, then I shall welcome the trial. All who channel from dragon and griffin alike should flourish under the wards, and Alaracia will be that haven should one of the others ever return. I was like, oh, okay. Like, she's making it sound like channeling was almost a somewhat common thing as long as wards were up because they could be like mostly protected. And then I was thinking here, I think we now have 3 names of the 6. Do we have all of their names yet?
No.
So we have 3.
One of the 6?
I'm assuming. Like Warren, Lyra, and Braxton, I'm assuming.
It's Warwick.
Oh, Warwick. Sorry. Yeah. I don't know why. I guess I just assumed since Lyra was talking about him that he is one of the 6. And then I wonder if Lyra also channeled since she like kind of holds this sentiment, and maybe if all 6 did, like that would be pretty crazy if all 6 of the first who created the wards. But what would be interesting about that is that they warded against the Venon, but maybe that was also to like protect themselves in a way too.
Well, they're channeling from their dragon. They're not channeling from the earth.
So well, wait, was Braxton weird, was Braxton a flyer then?
Oh, could be. Because it says,
cause it says all, alike. Yeah. Mm. So she believes that griffins should be included in the ward, and she's helping Braxton.
Well, that makes sense because they had even said that. I think it was Lilith that said Warwick didn't want outsiders. He lied in his journals about the wardstone.
Oh, right.
You need Lyra's because she was more open to like having others or whatever.
Okay.
And that's why that the answer that was in Lyra's journal. Maybe Braxton is a flyer
Braxton
or somebody?
Possibly a flyer.
So maybe he was from like poor meal. And so that's why Aurelia would be a haven.
And that's why she would be court-martialed to help defend his people.
Well, like why did she word it that way then? Like all who channel from dragon and griffin.
It's still called that, to channel from your dragon. You're channeling the magic from them, right?
From dragon and griffin alike. So those bonded to both should all flourish under the wards.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. I got you.
I'm glad you brought that up though, because I feel like I kind of glazed over that one and I didn't really think about it at all.
Gotcha. But
I
wouldn't. Yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
I wouldn't think Braxton is one of the 6 though.
Well, no. Yeah, I don't think so anymore either after we've talked through it.
But I do. I think you're right though. I think Warwick and Lyra are the only 2 that we have. I don't know if we have names for the other 6.
Yeah. But maybe now that she has access to these other libraries, she'll end up finding some of their.
Especially if if Mariah is the queen of Poramiel, then maybe Braxton's journal, if he had one, that would be interesting. My next note was just Bodhi saying, remind me how you know this guy. And Violet says, I saved his life during navigation last year. And I wrote, hey, life debt.
And he's just like totally there to help him out. No questions asked. What a good guy. Well, while they head to the Wardstone, they get Sawyer and they convince him to come with them. And they're all like sneaking around. It says they notice 3 different kinds of people. They notice a patrol of infantry, and the infantry is wearing blue, some scribes in their tan robes, and then it just says, and then another in scarlet tunic. works. And so I'm like, who are these people wearing scarlet? What color is that? And then later, while I was reading, I find that Queen Mariah has scarlet pants. So are they people that are with Queen Mariah and we just don't know she's there yet? Because technically she would be there, right? Like, yeah, because she comes to the meeting in the morning.
So just like some Paramish soldiers or something like that?
Yeah. But I was like really thrown off by scarlet just because, I don't know, I just feel like it's a thing that everyone's in their specific colors all the time.
Yeah, maybe it is just the color of the Paramish soldiers.
What color do the healers wear?
White? Question mark?
So I feel like red would be a good choice to hide blood if you didn't want to freak people out. But
it said, riders wear black, infantry wear dark blue, scribes wear cream, and healers wear light blue.
Okay, never mind.
Well, I just thought I'd bring it up just in case somebody was like, duh, Lauren, it's totally these people.
No, didn't think about it.
Well, they get to the Wardstone, and Sawyer starts doing his thing, and he ends up like changing some ward. And then Marin's like, nope, that didn't work. And he's like, cool, on to the next one, and like changes another one, like changes some other rune. And Riddick says, kind of wondering what protection we just took off. What? And they all just move on. Like, nobody says anything. We get one another sentence from Riddick. I feel like Rebecca hides all these things in like silly Riddick one-off sentences that are probably super important. But like, apparently we just changed something on the Wardstone that's been there for 600 years and nobody cares because it wasn't the thing they meant to change. So moving on. Like,
for some reason, I thought they brought this up again later, but maybe not. Like, I thought it was in this section.
I don't think it is. And they don't fix it. They're just like, oh, okay, too bad. Move on. So maybe we'll find out something that they totally wrecked. Just tucking that one away.
My next note here is when they were in battle brief, people were getting seated. This was the day after they did the ward thing the night before. It says, Arik nods, and I notice Baylor and Lynx covering their backs while Sloane and Avalyn lead the way, keeping Kai protected at every angle. And I wrote, who the fuck is Kai? Who? Like, who is this person?
I saw your note, and so I went and looked it up beforehand so that I could have the answer for you today. And so in Iron Flame, he is only mentioned twice, and he's never mentioned anywhere else in any of the books. So the first time is in chapter 52 of Iron Flame when they are in Battle Brief, and Arik is talking about how he wants to be able to channel so that he can work the new ink pen, because, of course, you have to have magic in order to use a ballpoint pen. Violet said that she thinks Kai, the lone first-year flyer without Luella, was going to beat them all. So he is a flyer, and he is all by himself since Luella died in the Cliffs of Draelor. And then later in chapter 64, Violet is running really, really fast to get to the Wardstone, and she's like, move! I shout at Lynx and Baylor because I remember their names. Avalyn, Sloane, Arik, Kai, the flyer. I know all the first year's names. So she mentions Kai, the flyer, and that's the only time he's ever mentioned. So I feel like your note of saying who the F is Kai is kind of valid.
It is valid.
Yes. But Lauren, I'm surprised that you didn't pick up on this because he was mentioned once earlier in Onyx Storm. It was right before the Codex off that happened outside. Mm. It was when they thought that there was some hot goss going around the cafeteria or whatever was happening. And Reese says, I'm just hoping it's a peaceful bonding experience since I'm fairly certain there's some kind of love triangle going on between Avalyn, Baylor, and Kai.
I will say
I remember that
at the very start of the book, at least in the Kindle version I have, it had like this nice little graph here to tell you all about. But the thing is, and I totally forgot to mention it back in like our prologue section, this tells me who is important and who is not, because it goes over like the two main ones, Violet and Zayden, and then it goes to Imogen, Quinn, Rhiannon, Sawyer, Riddick, Sloane, and even Arik is listed at the very bottom. Arik, not manifested in his signet. And then it has three others, first years with unmanifested signets, Avalyn, Baylor, and Lynx. That they didn't get their own little section with their dragon. That tells me not important, possibly dead.
Well, I think they leave off because, like, because Garrick's not on there, is he? Because we don't know his signet. Well,
Garrick's not on here. We don't know.
And then we wouldn't. Well, I don't think we know.
Second squad flame or flame section fourth wing. Specifically.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. And Bodhi's not on here either.
Yeah, but
so it's just that
same
squad.
Thing for the flyers though, because it says. Yeah, it just goes over that squad. It just says Catriona and Marin, and then the other ones, Bregan, Neve, Traeger, and Kai. So it doesn't even like say anything about them. So it kind of told me from the beginning, like, these are characters I don't really have to keep track of right now.
Well, is that also just because we don't know their, like, dragons either? Like, those
or
haven't been mentioned?
Names. Yeah.
Or the Griffin's names, yeah.
But the fact that I don't know
still.
That tells me even more.
Yeah, but just because they're not important in Fourth Wing or Iron Flame doesn't mean they won't be important in Onyx Storm.
I mean, they're running out of time to become important.
Kai's now the main character.
People are going to die in this book. We're running lower and lower on characters. You either become important or you die.
But this is the third book in a 5-book series. Like, yeah. We're not even technically halfway through yet until the middle of this one.
That's why I would say we still have time for these minor character deaths, because in the second or the fourth and the fifth one, it's just going to be characters you care about dying. It's not going to be freebies
that makes
anymore.
Me so nervous.
It's going to be like freebies. There's no freebie first years coming in being like, well, I'll die for you. It's going to be people who matter to you for the past 4 or 5 books.
Emotional damage.
How dare you, Kyle?
Probably true, but
I know. It's annoying.
But yeah, who the heck is Kai?
Yeah, well,
he's a flyer.
The flyer. The flyer, Kai.
Yes. R.I.P. Luella.
Baking the pie in the sky.
You butterscotch pie in the sky.
Oh my God. Also, during that Luella conversation, I totally said Llewellyn and had to like change myself to say Luella because we didn't meet Llewellyn yet, but I had known who Llewellyn was, but Llewellyn and Luella are really close.
It's probably why she killed her off. She was like, oh, that's too close.
It's too similar.
You got it.
Probably. That's probably it. All right. So chapter 8, the new commanding general asshat shows up and Dane says, Dad? And he says, I have no son. And I just like, what? How did his character take such a hard left turn from coming across like all jolly and that's my bestie's dad? And like now all of a sudden he's like literally disowning his son and throwing public fits about them not being punished enough. That just feels like so dramatic. But then I'm like, are people around him not noticing that he's still being promoted? Do they not see that?
Or is it just that they're all... Yeah, still like want him because like he's a holder of secrets or whatever. And that's a very common thing for people, especially males, to do when they lose the control they had, is way overcompensate for it.
So then, yeah, put him in an even higher position of power.
Yeah.
That's the next logical step. But then Zayden's jaw flexes. So cheers.
It does.
My next note also had to deal with Sir Aetos, where he took her into this meeting and was sort of immediately like, well, here she is. Let's do what we all planned to do with her, and immediately was met with, hey, remove yourself if you can't be silent, Aetos. You have no purview here. And I was just like, yeah, get wrecked, dipstick. Like, shut up. You're the message boy in this scenario.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting how powerful Lilith seemed to be in that role and how, like, just almost like figurehead type feelings that Aetos has. Like, oh, yeah, he's just there to fill a space, but he's not actually anyone important.
Yeah.
As where Lilith was, like, literally right next to Melgrin and seemed to be very much involved in, like, actually what was going on.
And that may have been why he got promoted. Maybe it was just one of those, like, well, that's. He's the next up in line. Like, what are we going to do? Make someone jump 3 ranks? But
well, and he probably knew the job so much because he worked right next to Lilith for so long, but still.
Mm-hmm. And then Violet basically admits, like, what she did, and they do the whole, like, the order that they signed, they're pardoned, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then Queen Mariah pops in, and we get that brief little intro of her coming in, and I just put, whoa, color me intrigued. I don't know why, man. It set me off, bro. I don't know why.
I love this so much.
I don't know why.
The silver gleam of her breastplate.
Yeah, the armor, the pants. I don't know what it was, man.
And now I want to look up her description again.
She said she had a tiara.
It had me worried for a split second because it did say, like, the silver gleam of her breastplate, and for a split second I thought it was gonna be like her silver hair or whatever, like, oh no.
Oh yeah. But yeah,
it didn't turn out to be that way.
Okay, yeah, so here's the description. Now I feel like I need to go back and read it again because this was so hilarious to me. This is John's new book girlfriend. I glance to my right, then do a double take at the woman standing in the north doorway of the hall.
North doorway.
The silver of her intricate armored breastplate flashes in the morning light as she walks forward, her smile crinkling the light brown skin at the edges of her dark eyes. She wears a pair of scarlet breeches with a short sword sheathed at her hip and a sparkling tiara atop her riotous curls, its delicacy a striking contrast to her weaponry. Queen Mariah.
I'll say riotous curls is a great way to describe a hairstyle.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it does say the light brown skin at the edges of her dark eyes. Yeah, that's the one I was just looking at.
Woo.
I know, right?
Yeah, yowza. All right.
I'll send you this link, John.
Thanks, appreciate it. All right. And then this is when he follows her out and he's like threatening her or whatever. And he shares with them that he's now the new commander of Bazgaiath. And I wrote the ugh that I ughed here. He's like, no, not him. Anybody but him.
I had a note here for sort of the same line, but mine was just like, yeah, congrats on your new role as captain of a sinking ship. But you guys, like, have fun.
Yeah.
Must be real exciting. It's not like you're at its prime here. Like, you are literally here at the worst time in its history.
Well, and then Violet's, like, retort to him after he, like, freaks out on her was, you know, one of my dragons is among the most powerful on the continent, and the other is the rarest. I didn't realize it last year or even a few months ago, but I do now. You can't afford to kill me. And my comment here was, loving this! And then his response is, then they'll pay each and every time you disobey an order or step out of line, starting now. And he says it towards her squad. And I was like, not loving this.
Dang it. No.
I know. I was like, oh, yeah, get him, girl. And there was like, oh, crap. He got you back. Like,
That's how I felt when he did that. I was like, dang it. Should have seen that coming, that he was going to like, well, you can't go after me.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go after all of your friends.
Who are conveniently standing right behind you watching this.
And their punishment is, of course, to go to Samara. And they do. So in Chapter 9, that's where we find them. And the leader of this area literally pretty much greets them with, like, I don't really care what you did to piss off Atos. I'm too busy fighting a war to discipline cadets. So find whatever space you can and rack out. Get some rest. Make yourselves useful wherever you see fit. I just wrote, I like this Degrassi guy already.
I called him Degrassi the whole time. That's so funny.
But I was like, yeah, what a legitimate, like, you're removed from the drama of the college reaction. Like, yeah, you are actually in the war. You don't give a crap of someone who's been pardoned, technically done nothing wrong. You're like, I don't care. I'm losing men.
Some political game.
I don't care about this chess match he's playing with you. And then my next note was about her dream. She was like, sure is one crazy little dream Violet has yet again. And it's different than last time. So that made me think that maybe they are some sort of foretelling of the future. Because, like, if it is, we already saw the, you know, event come to pass in the last book. So some sort of, like, dream soothsayer power that she doesn't know about.
This is the end. This is it. I just put the last line here so we could talk about how it's over, where they just decide that they're going to go help Meryn's family, and or at least attempt to help Meryn's family get evacuated. So it says, well, Degrassi did tell us to make ourselves useful, so let's go be of use. And that's where we end it. So what did you guys think about all of Onyx Orb? No, for real though. What are your current character thoughts at the beginning of Onyx Orb?
For some reason, I have become immediately infatuated with Queen Mariah. I need to know more about her. Want to see more of Arik also, especially seeing as how it might be a popular opinion that, like, he should be the next in line instead of Holden. I thought that was super interesting when that one guy, like, kind of alluded to that. Loving how Second Squad just seems to be, like, getting tighter and tighter. And I hope Sawyer, I hope Sawyer makes, like, an epic comeback in some way. Yeah. I think that'd be dope. Also, can't wait to see even more of Andarna in action, since we got a little bit of that during the battle. And then General Atos is my new guy on top of the old shit list.
As he should be.
I also put that the queen did intrigue me some. Always love us a bookish lady, am I right? The other Prince Holden is also one I'm sure we'll get to see more of, but maybe not as much as Violet's seen already. Am I right? Hey. Aside from that, I don't know of many characters we, like, got introduced to here, so, like, not much change there, really. I also am glad Sawyer's back up and about. As you were sort of saying yours, I think it'd be really neat for him to get, like, a metal prosthetic and then just always have some sort of ammo. He's got this metal on him sort of thing. But
that'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Okay, so now that you know where we are at the beginning of the book, what are you expecting? What are you hoping for? What are your theories? Put something wild out there.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm hoping, like I said, I'm hoping we get more into her mom's journals, not just pre-jet blurbs. I'm expecting a connection between the Venon and Violet's hair. I'm thinking maybe, like, her mom was partially drained by a Venon or something when she was pregnant with Violet, or maybe either, like, her mom or dad became Venon sometime after. It would obviously had to have been after they had Mira, because none of their hair is silver. And, like, maybe they just, like, hit it well and we're just somehow really good at hiding it. Yeah, I'm waiting for the shoe to drop there with that connection, because there clearly is with the silver hair. But what is it going to mean? It's going to be a big thing.
What does it all mean?
Yeah. What does it all mean?
Let me pitch this to you, John. What if her dad was a little bit Venon, had channeled before? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, they got pregnant with Violet. But what if her dad's heart never really gave out? And it was just him refusing to channel more, and he just eventually died from withdrawals, so to speak.
Yeah.
And that was just like sort of their excuse to be like, yeah, your dad's heart gave out. But that was her hiding.
Grieving, yeah.
Hiding the fact that in the same way that Violet would probably grieve Zayden at this point, just an initiate enough to mess up Violet's hair, I guess.
I like it.
That is interesting. I always thought that like maybe, and again, this was like something, I think I maybe mentioned this in Iron Flame, that I kept thinking her dad's going to be alive and he's a Venon or something. Like I kept thinking he didn't actually die, but then she had confirmed in an interview after Onyx Storm, like that he was dead or something, or not Onyx Storm, after Iron Flame, that people were having all these like wild theories about him being alive because we didn't get his research and stuff. Yeah. And like, so I kept thinking he was alive. This, I feel like, would make so much more sense.
Yeah, I've never had a theory about how he died other than just his heart or whatever. But like, what if he was involved with the whole Brennan almost dying moment? And so he was like, I'm giving up on, you know, I think I killed my own kid or something.
I'm clean now.
How long do we know? Like, do Venon have extended lifespans?
Sounded like it. But also, didn't they say, like, in this one, looking at Jack's cage, he would die in a couple weeks or something like that?
Without channeling or whatever? Yeah. But what if her dad was, like, I don't know if initiates live that long. Who knows how long he could have been Venon before he met her mother and hid it from her or whatever. And he could be as old as Andarna's egg. And he was researching those feather tails.
Well, if that was the reason for Violet's hair, though, then you would think that Brennan and Mira would also have
That's true. Yeah. Never mind.
But still super interesting.
These are the theories we've been waiting for, gentlemen. Yes.
I'll get into what I actually wrote here. I just theorized more new signets, including more second signets, now that those are apparently a thing. We'll get to see a lot more of the world outside of Navarre, which could be interesting as they're sort of leaving to find these other dragons. Learn a lot more about Violet's dad, since we know a little bit, but haven't seen his research. We just heard about it. And my biggest bet is Zayden's just going to slowly give in to being Venon. He could barely hold in his excitement already. He's like, ooh, it's so tempting. And I feel like there's going to be some times where he's like, oh, I'm just not strong enough. A little taste couldn't hurt again. I'll just channel him. You know, he'll think that he's in control, but he's slowly going to lose it.
Yeah.
Either that or hold back for one big, like, screw it, I'm Venon.
All or nothing.
Yeah. Yep.
I would love to know more about, like, all the lost parents. Like, everyone seems to have one parent. Like, Zayden and Dane and Violet. Like, they all have one parent that we know about.
Yeah, wait, where's Dane's missing mom?
So Violet has none.
Well, yeah, but we know about her, Kyle. Zayden has none either. Or, I mean, I guess we don't actually know where mom is, but.
R.I.P.
But, yeah, where is Dane's mom? Nobody talks about it.
I thought they said that never occurred to me.
Did she die?
I don't think so. I just don't think we hear anything.
That's maybe weird.
Just, after seeing his dad, maybe she just left. I'm done with this.
So valid. I don't know. All right. I'm so excited, though, about these like thoughts and theories, because I also have so many thoughts and theories. Mm. So I can't wait to hear what you guys think. I need Kyle to predict all the books.
Yes. Yeah. I can't wait for all of us to have the same information so we can all theorize together.
Cannot wait. All right. Well, that takes us to the cry counter. I'm still at 3.
I'm in the lead with 4. Not happy about it.
Zero.
I'll work on crying for you, Connor.
Maybe we'll get the boys in this book. I'm not confident after the first two.
Yeah, it really hasn't been the pull in the old heartstrings.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get them next time. That's a wrap our first episode of Onyx Storm. Next week, we will be continuing Onyx Storm with chapters 10 to 19. If you are watching here on YouTube, be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and follow us at Between Pages and Friends on Instagram and TikTok for podcast schedules, announcements, behind the scenes, and even more book-related nonsense.
Yes, and do you crave even more unhinged book content? Do you long to scream about more morally gray love interests in a community that gets you? Do you enjoy supporting absolute goblins like us so we can continue our literary shenanigans? Then get your butt over to BetweenPagesAndFriends.com and sign up for Patreon. While you're there, you can also check out our merch, because your wardrobe is 73% book related, and we both know you need to bump that up to at least 90%. Also, our Amazon storefront, filled with our must-haves, can't live without bookish essentials. Goodreads, Storygraph links so you can stock those TBRs like the true book detective you are, and more. Yes, more. So much more. It's unhinged. Seriously, what are you still doing here? Go, go, go! Until next time, stay wordy, stay nerdy, don't stress, and stay blessed.
Stay blessed. Get out of here, you crazy kids.
Go on, get.
See you later.
Don't do this in a while.
Forgot about that already.
Yay.
Great job, everyone.
Wow, guys.
That's a good one.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit To get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7-9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.